Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
How's it feel? But you're back in Philly, taking this place over.
I just talked, bro.
Captain. Man, it felt great. You know, we knew this was going to be a tough environment. A little tougher than last game because there was 2,500 seats that were taken up. But we knew it was going to be a battle. We knew it was going to be a grind. And like I said, you got to give them credit. It was a tough series, a tough pace to play. But, you know, the place we're all comfortable with.
650-649. That was the difference in this series between the Knicks and the Sixers. A classic series, an instant classic series. It was six games in length, but there was seven games worth of drama, seven games worth of intensity, seven games worth of storylines. I mean, it feels like we got a seven-game series, and I'm already missing it. Like, I want more of it. I was sad to see it end. That was one of the most, we could unpack it, you know, from both angles, both sides, both perspectives. But that was just, from a basketball fan, playoff basketball standpoint, that was as much fun as I've had watching a series in any round, not just first round, in any round that I can remember. And my memory is not great these days, admittedly, but yeah. I just had so much fun watching New York and Philly go at it on the court and in the press and in the stands and on the streets and on social media. It was everything a New York and Philly showdown in any sport should be.
Well, that was part of it, wasn't it, though, Michael? Isn't that part of it? That it was New York and Philly separated by 90 miles. You can take a trip there. You can get on the train and go to Philly or New York, or you can make that drive. And East Coast, as you know, living on the East Coast is a little different. I was raised in the Midwest, but I'm glad that I've lived on the East Coast for many years because it's just a different kind of vibe, different intensity. And so you have those fan bases, two great basketball cities. I mean, like Philadelphia is a basketball city. Like old school, I'm talking about college basketball, the Big Five, the Palestra, that kind of thing. And then New York, of course, you know, the Knicks, an original franchise in the NBA in the history of New York ballers. And so, like, all of that.
They both got the same edge. Both those cities just got the same, you know,
And let me tell you this. I just got to say,
culturally, everything, not just sports-wise, not just in terms of sports, but just culturally too, man. Like, I love both those towns, man. Quick sidebar, I hated when Embiid was talking about how much New York is his favorite city in the world. I'm like, ooh, that ain't going to go over well.
No, say go that. Ahead. You can't say yeah. that.
Can't say Listen, that as, you know, somebody in Philly. Come on, man. What you doing?
As much as I appreciate your spoken word poem to this series, okay? I think somewhere in the poetry, you should mention. You said, hey, it was six games, but it felt like seven. We got all that. We would have had seven if the officiating had been better. Like, yes, it was a seven-game series. And
are you
the
still
reason
on that?
Well, look, it's obvious. They blew a game. They cost us a game. Put it that way. Not even from a, hey, I ain't have money on it. Okay.
Yeah, I was wondering where the us came from. You mean fans? You mean they cost?
Fans.
They cost
basketball fans.
Well,
I had no money on it.
The only reason
I didn't care.
I said you're still on that was because the officials gave us a season's worth of screw ups in the ensuing games. I mean, okay, you'll give me, you know, the Nick Nurse not getting a timeout or Tyrese Maxey getting fouled. I'll give you Tyrese Maxey traveling on a 4-point play. I'll give you Joel Embiid should have been ejected, you know, and how much he was able to get away with throughout the series. So, yes, that was probably the most egregious.
Do you think it all evened out?
But there were plenty of screw-ups when it came to officiating in this series. It all evened out, yes.
You think it evened out in that?
It literally evened out. 650 to 649. I think it did at the end of the day, yes.
Yeah, I feel like it would have been a 7-game series because that changes everything, though. Like, it's, okay, yeah, traveling on a 4-point play. But at that point, so in the series, that was game two. So now you got a 1-1 series. If you get the Maxey play right, now it changes the whole dynamic of the series. Like, every game just changes what happens. So when people like you say it evens out, I say no, because that happened at a time where the series was in its infancy and you were still establishing, okay, now New York loses that game. They lose home court advantage, and now you go back to Philly, and now it's 1-1.
Okay.
So now Philly wins that game 2-1. Like, the whole thing changed.
Look, heard. You know, people say that now. Heard. I hear you. The chronology of it all, it changes. No, yeah. I hear you on that. But I don't think that takes away from the quality overall, the theater of the series as a whole. The star of the show, Jalen Brunson. Can I inundate you with some stats, please, Michael? Would you mind?
Yes,
would you indulge me?
Bring it on.
I see stuff like this and I'm like, you gotta be kidding me, you know? Because, I mean, it's like, you know how I like to say, when it comes to quarterbacks, like quarterback X may not be a franchise quarterback, but he's that franchise's quarterback. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yep.
Jalen Brunson may not be the best player in the league, but if I'm a Knicks fan right now, and yes, it's easy to say because he's ours, would say a Knicks fan, there's not a player I'd rather have on my side right now. Jalen Brunson is that dude, like, if you're going out somewhere, you want to take him with you just in case shit happened. You know what I mean? Like, you just want to take that dude with you just because. Like, and if I'm going into a game, I just want Jalen Brunson with me. That is different from, if I had a game to win, who am I picking first? Who am I starting a team with? Or if I'm building a franchise, who am I starting a team with? That's not the same thing. It's just something about the way this dude gets it done.
Yep.
In these moments, and the way he performed in this series in particular. If I'm a Knicks fan, all the years of being shunned, all the thirsty years after the next biggest free agent to come that we're hoping picks New York, and why wouldn't you want to come to the greatest city in the world, and why wouldn't you want this fan base to starve for a superstar, and all the different pieces being moved to open up cap space for this guy, who could we trade for, says Knicks fan base, all of those years of suffering and waiting to get a dude that it wasn't that long ago people were like, wait, $100 million for Jalen Brunson, that's an overpay. Dude's underpaid. Okay, here's the stats I was referring to.
Let's get those stats.
All right, average 35.5
okay
for the series, along with 9 assists and 4.5 rebounds. Okay, 3 straight 40-point games to close out the series. 7th player in NBA history with 3 consecutive 40-point playoff games. 7th player in NBA history. They've had a lot of playoff games played, He's now the seventh guy to have three straight 40-point playoff games. Jamal Murray in the bubble. Allen Iverson, who Sixers fans must have thought they were watching last night. Same type of vibe to him. Like, I want to be in a fight. If a series is going to turn into a street fight, I want Allen Iverson on my side, right? Michael Jordan, who did it three times. Bernard King, Kareem, and Jerry West. That's the company Jalen Brunson is keeping right now. Okay. Third player with four consecutive playoff games of 35 or more points and five or more assists in a single postseason, LeBron and MJ. People think, are like, man, where y'all dig up these stats? Or people be fudge the numbers to fit your narrative and you're inventing stats. Nah, man, like, I'm sorry. When the list is LeBron and Michael Jordan, I'm good with focusing on 35 points and five or more assists. Okay. Fourth player in NBA playoff history to record 40 or more points and 10 or more assists in a series-clinching win, Devin Booker, Chris Paul, Michael Jordan. And then he joins the Big O as the only players in NBA history, you probably heard this on TNT last night, with three games of 35 or more points and 10 or more assists in a playoff series. Him and Oscar Robertson. That's it. Like, that's the... So, like... Superstar gets thrown around a lot, but this is superstar stuff. And what's better than being a superstar is being a legend, which is what he already is. I know they don't give out trophies for the first round. I'm a preemptive. I know what you're going to say. I know everything you're about to say against me. I know everything you're about to say against me. I am white. I am a bum. No. Like, I know they don't give out trophies for the first round. I know. That's not what you're about to say? What you about to say?
Why do you keep saying superstar stuff? Why do you keep qualifying it? He's a superstar.
I don't like to.
You know why this?
Everybody can't be a superstar. Everybody can't be a superstar.
He is.
What's above superstar? Icon.
Nothing.
What's above superstar?
Nothing.
If nothing's above superstar,
this is what he is.
I can't put him in the same category with
as
the LeBrons of the world, the Currys of the world, the people who have done it deep into the playoffs year after year won championships and MVPs.
He can't do that now. He can't. Okay. He's on the path. He's on the path. He's on the superstar path.
You're going, there we go.
You're going the right way.
That's all.
Am I going the right way? Yeah, dog. You got it.
Roll down the window. Back in the day, they used to roll down windows like this. Kids don't know nothing about y'all.
Right.
All y'all know is power windows. Hey, am I going the right way? Yes.
Keep going.
Yes. That's 100%.
What you're doing? He's on the path.
Stay on the path. Yes, he's on the path.
Let me tell you something.
Yes.
Let me tell you something about Jalen Brunson. It's other people's problem. Other people have the problem, not him. So... he, first of all, comes from, and this is a big thing for me. We were talking about this in a different context, different sport, fantasy life, not real life. But I think bloodlines matter. Mm. I think bloodlines matter. Just from, it doesn't make, you didn't turn you into a good player, but an exposure to that life gives you an understanding and an insight that other people don't have because they don't have the life that you have. So he's a much better player than his father was. No comparison. But he saw the life. And his father was one of my favorite players, not because of his game, but because of his grind. Because I love those guys who build 10 to 12 year careers playing for five or six different teams. And after a while, you're like, wait a minute, man, that dude played for so many teams. He had a nice, you know, double digit NBA career. So he was exposed to that. He went to Nova and was a champion in Philly.
Yes.
So back to Philly. He was a champion in college. The league missed him. Why was he a second round pick? Stupid.
Yeah.
He said, like, come on, that's stupid. He's a great player. Like, he was a great college player and a champion.
Right.
He goes
Did
to
thing
Dallas.
In Dallas. Did his Dallas. Thing in Dallas. Yes. Yes.
Dallas. Y'all missed it. I'm like, you overpay him, do whatever you got to do to keep Jalen Brunson playing for Jay Kidd.
I don't know if anybody knew he was going to be this. I don't even know if New York, even with Rick Brunson, knew he was going to be this.
But think about this. Like, when you say, ooh, Jalen Brunson, 40 in the playoffs, New York wasn't the first time he did that. He did that in Dallas.
No, he did it in Dallas. He did it in Dallas. Yeah, I do. So, that's what I'm saying. Dallas knew, but they still underestimated him. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And so now, because he's not, I don't know, and he's New York has not overhyped him. It's not like, oh, he's just a product of this. No, this dude's a great player. He's a great player. And so when you go over that list.
Yeah, I'm good with great players. I'm good with great players.
Hey, he may not be the best. I can't really think of a lot of guys that I would take over Jalen Brunson. I can't. At that position, not a lot of guys I'd take over.
Oh, at that position. Okay, yeah.
At that position.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, in the league, regardless of position,
right
yes.
Now. I'm talking about right now.
But even if you're just talking about right, like there's a lot of those dudes that you would take that are going home, starting with 21 in the other jersey. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a lot of dudes that you might, like, if we're just ranking players, you may rank over Jalen Brunson that ain't playing right now. So that's irrelevant.
I don't know.
Like, well, that's fine. You don't know what?
Actually, I do know.
Which part?
We were going the same position. But if you want to go, would I rather have Embiid or Jalen Brunson? Give me Jalen Brunson.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. But I think, wait, hold on. Before we get to Embiid, we're going to get to Embiid. Yeah. Before we get there, though, stay on Jalen just real quick. My point was only that if we were doing the thought exercise of you're starting a team, make your list, it'd be quite a few guys, I think, not that many, but a few, that you would pick before Jalen Brunson for a variety of reasons. But right here, right now, on this stage, as this stage shrink as we get into the semifinals, like, yeah, of course you're not picking that many people over Jalen Brown the way he's or Jalen Brunson, excuse me, the way that he is performing right now. No, but he's definitely not a product of the New York hype. Dallas knew what they had and what they were losing, but I don't know that anybody could have anticipated that he would be this great of a player. And again, just to put a pin on the superstar thing, we landed on the right path by saying he's on the path. I mentioned the other guy. Like, if he's a superstar, Jamal Murray's a superstar. And I just, and I'm not taking anything away from Jamal Murray. I just, that's just a word I like to reserve. How is Jamal Murray not a superstar if Jalen Brunson is?
Because I think Jalen Brunson's a better player than Jamal Murray. Ooh, I said it. I think Jalen Brunson's a better player.
It's not just the championship. It's what he's done in the playoffs over years. Jamal Murray does play alongside Nikola Jokic. That's the obvious differentiator. That helps. But what Jamal Murray has done on the biggest stage, season after season, is one of the best playoff performers in recent memory. I think the reason I brought up Murray was not a one-for-one. I'm saying we're just talking about somebody like that's been a great player in big moments. Jamal Murray's been as good as anybody in big moments. And so I just don't like – it's like telling people you love them. Like, you can't tell everybody you love them. You know, like, you can't, every woman you date, you can't tell them you love them. That's just like, you know, it's like that's got to be special. You got to reserve that. I'm not saying Jalen Brunson is not special. I'm just real conservative – with A, you know, that guy's a superstar. It's like, well,
I'm not. I'll tell you why I'm not. Because
can't just give it to everybody. Everybody can't be in the club. Everybody can't be in VIP.
I hate when
VIP is crowded. What's the purpose of VIP if people standing up in VIP? What's the purpose? You know? Supposed to be comfortable.
Right.
Supposed to be exclusive.
Okay.
You know?
But let me ask you. Was Jamal Murray, like 2 years ago, was Jamal Murray a clutch player?
Yes.
2 years ago? Yeah.
Yes.
But he hadn't won a championship. And so now
I'm not, you know me.
But you said biggest stage. So the biggest stage in general.
I'm not
Jalen Brunson
for the finals.
Well, got that. Check that box.
It's not his fault he ain't been to the finals yet. I mean, it's like, and that hasn't gotten there yet. Doesn't mean he won't. I'm not saying it. You got to do it in the finals. You're the one that thinks finals MVP is more impressive than regular season MVP. And you know I'm not a rings guy. I'm not saying championship is the reason why I'm not putting Jalen Brunson in that pantheon. I'm simply saying I think superstars should be a small, exclusive group of people. And I just don't, but he is on the path. We agreed on that.
But I was just arguing against your, hey, if Jalen Brunson's a superstar, then Jamal Murray is a superstar. No, Jamal Murray is in the car behind him. Okay. He's a couple cars behind. I think Brunson's better. I just think Brunson's better. I think he's a better player. Anyway.
You can think he's better, but a couple of, see, but you keep, you said, we can't move on because you keep throwing stuff out there.
Move on.
A couple of cars behind, you can say he's better. That's fine.
Ignore me.
But a couple of cars behind him, like, I know you go to bed early these days, Mike, as do I, but I think he literally and figuratively sleeping on Jamal Murray. Okay. Before we get to Embiid, because I think in the Sixers,
yeah,
I want to get to this next series, in which the Knicks are heavily favored against the Pacers.
That's interesting. Yeah,
let's do the winners, and then we'll do the losers, and then we'll do somebody that's acting like a loser. That's a little impromptu rundown. Okay.
Okay.
I don't want to. So you say it's interesting. It is. That the Knicks are so heavily favored over the Pacers, given the Pacers' depth, given the way they play, the way they share the ball. But I'm already guilty of overlooking the Pacers. No disrespect, but we just talked about New York and Philly. I can't wait for New York and Boston. I can't wait. I cannot wait for that. That dynamic is going to be something to behold.
You are overlooking Indiana.
I'm literally overlooking Indiana. Disrespect.
Why? You tell me why. No, but that's disrespectful.
This is going to be a theme.
Don't say no
this
disrespect.
This is going to be a theme. This is going to be a theme throughout this show. No disrespect, but let me disrespect Elliot and Indiana by saying, yeah, Knicks Celtics. Woo, that's going to be fun. 1-2 going to be fun. I think the Knicks, they got that look about them, dude. They got that, not of destiny, but of a deep run. I like their toughness. I think this could be a 7-game series. I like Indiana enough to think it's a 7-game series, which would belie somebody overlooking Indiana. It's a 7-game series. I could have so easily overlook Indiana. Those two things are incongruent.
Okay.
But I do like the Knicks' toughness, and I'm going with the best player on the floor. Apologies to Tyrese Halliburton. I'm going with Jalen Brunson. I'm riding this Jalen Brunson thing till the wheels fall off in the conference finals against the Celtics. Maybe. That's a conversation for a different day.
All right. Wow, I'm shocked. Okay, so I'm just looking at, the box score from last night, if you're wondering what I'm doing.
The Pacers
and
box
I
score?
I see the Sixers-Knicks box score, and I'm going to tell you what happened in that game that's not going to happen against the Pacers. Tobias Harris played 30 minutes and didn't
score.
Got cardio,
yeah.
He put Tobias Harris, who makes a lot of money. He makes a lot. He's got a big contract.
I said 39 million, yeah. Something like that.
He didn't score. What?
Yeah.
Dude, you didn't score? Okay, the Pacers are going to put so much pressure on the Tom Thibodeau ethic, the Tom Thibodeau brand, and
let me interrupt you for a second with a question, because it's been a while since I've seen you. I haven't seen you since last week. Forgot what day it was. Maybe it was Wednesday. It sounds like you're qualifying this Knicks win that they beat the Sixers with some help from the officials. That's what it sounds like you're doing. Is that how you feel, or am I putting words in your mouth?
Now you're picking up something pretty good though. You are. Yeah. So I think
almost this was a, they ain't beat nobody. They ain't seen nothing like what they about to see in Indiana. Sound like what you say.
Well, they haven't, because what they had was a compromised Joel Embiid. And see, it was like, I can take my cheap shot. I won't do it. It's so easy. It's too easy. Compromised Joel Embiid and officials who had a rough time. I was going to say compromised officials, but that's not fair.
Both ways. Embiid should have been kicked out probably more than once.
Here's a big difference. Their best player was hurt. Philadelphia's best player was hurt. Indiana's best player is Indiana's best players.
We're gonna come back to Philly because I got a problem with just that statement. But go ahead.
But okay. But I'm not even tripping on Philly. I'm just saying the challenge as you grow up, the challenge is there. It's harder. It's gonna get harder against Indiana. So all the things like it'd be crazy for us to say, well, oh man, I can't wait. They got that look. They did that against Philly and step out of the way, Indiana. No, Indiana. I know.
Step over.
They
Indiana.
Beat a team. They beat a team that didn't have two of his best players. And we'll hear those excuses.
So wait a minute. So how are you going to sit up here and put an asterisk next to the Knicks beating the Sixers?
I didn't put an asterisk. Context.
You implied, or maybe I inferred, that you were putting an asterisk on the Knicks' victory with a compromise to Joel Embiid and officials.
I don't mess with those asterisks. I don't mess with
them. That's what it sounded. That sounded an awful lot like an asterisk to me.
No, I don't do that.
Okay, all right, cool.
But I'm just telling you that
Indiana's unstoppable because they just beat the Giannis and Dame-less
Bucks. Not unstoppable, I didn't say that. I'm telling you, they're worthy of more respect than you're giving them.
I gave them seven. I said Knicks and seven.
Oh, stop. Yeah, I said you already said the series is over.
You want me to pick
Indiana them? Can beat them. Let's just get to it.
Of course.
Indiana can eliminate the Knicks.
If I'm picking Knicks and seven, implied in that is that Indiana can beat them. Yes. Yes, they can.
So really?
I don't think they will, and I'm already excited what I'm saying. I think at the end of the day, the Knicks win. At the end of the series, the Knicks will emerge victorious.
That's disrespectful. Look at that. No disrespect, but bring on Boston and New York. And thank you. This clip is going to be circulating in the Pacers locker room. Rick Carlisle is going to put this on before a team meeting and say, see what they're saying out there. See what these folks are doing. So, yeah.
Who I'm really disrespecting is either Cleveland or Orlando. That's who I'm really disrespecting. Okay, because they're not going to beat Boston, Porzingis compromise or not. So I'm being clear. That's what I'm dismissing. I'm just saying I'm excited because we were talking about the Philly New York dynamic, you know, East Coast, you know, rival cities, rival sports towns. I'm saying okay, we got New York Boston on the horizon. Am I overlooking Indiana? Yes, but I could still acknowledge that it will be a competitive close, maybe not 650 to 649, but competitive close series. Another old school throwback series, Knicks Pacers.
Oh yeah,
not like they got no history there, you know.
The Davis brothers, Reggie Miller, Mark Jackson, good stuff. Patrick.
So you got the Pacers. You said they can beat the Knicks. Will they beat the Knicks? Are you picking the Pacers?
I don't know who I'm going to pick yet. I don't know. I think it's a really competitive because there's some tough matchups. Obviously, we're going to be looking at Brunson, Halliburton. But
no, Indiana's depth is nothing to be. I mean, we know where they are.
They're very similar, as a matter of fact. I think where Indiana has an advantage over the Knicks are going to really have to step up, and this is where they're going to miss Julius Randle, is trying to deal with Siakam. I mean, I don't know if New York has a great matchup for Siakam. So Siakam kind of has made Miles Turner like a better player too, because Miles Turner is more of like a, you know, he's like a great perimeter player. But Siakam can do it all. I think those two will be the key to the matchup because they can kind of play off of each other. And I think New York's going to have a hard time defensively. Those guys get in foul trouble. Forget it. I just don't see them matching up with both of them, especially Pascal. That was a great pickup for Indiana.
All right. We could park that.
Their role players are similar. I see a little Josh Hart and Aaron Nesmith, who's kind of like found himself after being discarded by Boston. So I can see, yeah, they got some really interesting matches. This is going to be a great series.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Have you ever spotted McDonald's hot, crispy fries right as they're being scooped into the carton? And time just stands still. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Oh, all right. So we talked about the winners. Let's talk about the teams that came up short. Speaking of hard, Doc Rivers had some commentary about the challenge of trying to beat those Pacers without Giannis, and up until last night for a couple of games without Damian Lillard, his Doc.
Last game, we're the first team in NBA history to win a game with your two best scorers out. I mean, that's history. That's not like one game or one year. It's hard to do, man. Like, take Jokic and Murray away. You know, go to each team and take your two best players away. It's going to be hard. We understood that, but what I loved about our guys is no one wavered. Not one guy wavered. Every single guy in that locker room thought, even without those guys, we're still going to win this series. And I say this all the time, winning is incredibly hard. It takes 12, 15 players turning themselves into one and buying in, your staff being together as one, and then health. And then you still may not win. You know, it's just hard. And you're not going to win unless you're healthy or unless you're really deep.
Don't shoot the messenger, Michael, please. Don't shoot the messenger. Because he's right.
He's right.
He's not wrong. People probably don't want to hear that from Doc Rivers, but he's not wrong. This is actually the best thing could have happened. Yeah, the best thing could have happened to... Actually, this series was the best thing could have happened to all parties involved for the Milwaukee Bucks. Here's why. Because the alternative... Well, there are two alternatives. They win the whole thing, okay, which even whole and healthy, I don't know that a lot of people thought they would A, beat Boston in the East or, you know, beat, let's just say, Denver in the West when it came down to it. Or they do what Doc Rivers teams do more often than not, and that's come up short with no excuses, right? We talked about this when Dame Lillard was going through his existential crisis at the end in Portland. And we talked about the thing that Dame had working for him was what could be. Well, if he had better teammates or if he decided to be like everybody else and join up with a superstar, what could happen? What would he have done? You know, the possibility of the thing often worked in Damian Lillard's favor, right? Some might say he was overrated because of the benefit of the doubt that he was getting because he wasn't playing with stacked teams. So then he goes to Milwaukee and all that's gone. All that's out the window. Now it's one of the two or three best duos in the NBA with Giannis, right? We all know how the season played out. And then Doc Rivers comes along. I love Doc. You love Doc. We all love Doc. Mr. 3-1 himself. Doc Rivers comes along. And everybody's already expecting how this movie is going to end. Best thing could happen to Milwaukee is that we could pause it. We could put it on pause. Because if they were healthy and they lose to Indiana in the first round, or they lose to somebody in the second round or you know, the conference finals, in typical Doc Rivers fashion, then it's like, well, damn. Doc can't get it done. Giannis' one championship run was the outlier. See, Dame, what's your excuse now? So they were going to win the whole thing when they traded for Damian Lillard. They were built to win. Now they got a built-in excuse. Now it's like, Okay. They didn't choke. They were dealing with impossible circumstances without their two best players. Indiana's good. Hell, Indiana gave them problems in the regular season, as we all know. So now you're asking them to beat Indiana without Giannis and Dame? You cannot, for once, this disappointment, this quote-unquote failure, which is a big topic last year, thanks to Giannis, this quote-unquote failure does not need an autopsy. We know exactly what it was.
Yeah.
We know exactly why it happened. There is no one to blame other than bad luck.
Yeah, well, there's a lot to blame. And what you're saying, if you take this snapshot from Milwaukee, you're right if you just look at this snapshot. If you're looking at the 2023-24 season or the end of the season, if you're looking at the end of the season, you're right. Everything you just said is correct from all-star break to the present, injuries to Dame, injuries to Giannis.
To say nothing of a new coach or relatively.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, that's where it is. That's where I want to go. You said they didn't choke. No, they didn't choke. Maybe they got fat and happy. They didn't choke. All the food went down and they just sat there. And they didn't appreciate. They lost their hunger. They lost their appreciation for what they had. And that's why the franchise has been spiraling since. Keep in mind, they won a championship 3 years ago. It wasn't even three. We're not even at the three-year anniversary of winning a championship.
Is this a Drew Holiday tweet? Is this Drew Holiday?
No, it's not even Drew Holiday. Oh. No, it's just it's an organizational. It's organizational
hubris.
It's organizational.
I love when we pick the same word.
We all have blind spots, and the organization had a blind spot. Now they hadn't won a championship since Oscar and Kareem were there.
Mm-hmm.
They hadn't won a championship since 1971, the Milwaukee Bucks. Bucks and six and all that outside
Your T-shirt. Where's your T-shirt?
Okay. Yes, that's right.
You still got those,
just like great spirit, people in tears. Oh, I'm so glad I got a chance to witness this. And Giannis, I could form a super team. But I wanted to do it here. I did it the hard way. All that stuff. That was just 3 years ago. Not even 3 years. And then they lose. They experience a little bit of adversity. They fire Mike Budenholzer. Then at 30-13, fast forward, they fire Adrian Griffin. And now you have Doc. And they probably can't wait to fire him too. They trade away Drew Holiday, after they lose in the first round, to Miami, they trade Drew Holiday. Mm-hmm. Okay, what does that have to do with anything? So they're just panicky. They're panicky. They don't have any vision. So where the people have no vision, they will perish.
They perish.
That's the problem.
Oh, I knew you were going
there.
That
is the problem.
Okay.
That is the problem with the Milwaukee Bucks. They lack vision.
But let me tell you what my
conviction.
Yeah,
and you know what they lack? It's over, yeah, man. It's over.
But Mike, okay, that's just easy. That was a good word. I appreciate your conviction. But that's also convenient. That's real easy to say when they lost with Giannis in street clothes, when Dame missed the previous two games against a team that you just said it might go to the conference finals, that beat them in the regular season, that gave them issues in the regular season, beat them a bunch of times. So
they were going nowhere.
We don't know what could have been.
This is convenient too.
In the multiverse where Giannis is healthy and Dame is healthy, we don't know what could have been.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. See, this is what happened. You said this is the best thing that happened. You spoke a word.
Right.
You
because
said the
we
best
don't know.
Thing that could happen.
Exactly.
The best thing
can always
could happen
say,
to
we don't know what could have happened. Same as Michael Jordan retiring in the middle of his career. Michael Jordan would have won 9 straight championships if he didn't retire. We don't know if he would have or not.
Mike, you said the best thing to happen to the Milwaukee Bucks is best for all parties involved is what happened.
Yes.
Because that's convenient. So when you lose, if you're Doc Rivers, because if I'm Doc's agent, I'd be like, hey, man, this is great for us. Great for us. Because ain't nobody talking about all.
You didn't blow
ain't nobody talking about how the team didn't perform for you.
Right.
They before people got hurt, the team was not performing. They weren't going nowhere. The spot, you know where the Milwaukee Bucks were going to go if they were healthy? Maybe to Chicago, 90 miles down the road. They ain't going nowhere. They're not going to the finals. This team's not good. They don't defend.
But they might have gone in the second round. They might have gone in the second round.
They suck now. They do. They kind of suck.
They might have gone in the second round. Wait, I mean, like, you don't think they could have at least beaten Indiana?
No.
If Giannis and Dame the series. They're not beating Indiana?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, I think there's some confirmation bias going on here. Because you had all these loaded in drafts. You had all this loaded in drafts.
It's not in drafts.
You felt about the Bucks for a while.
And
now that they lost, it's like, see, I told you so. How do you account for the fact they were missing those two players?
You said you haven't seen me in a while. You said you haven't seen me in a while, which is true.
Okay.
But I believe that the archive in the archives, I probably was doing the show with Vinny Goodwill. And we talked about, I think it was Vinny, and we talked about Bucks. Pacers. And I said, I like the Pacers. Before everybody got hurt, I like the Pacers. We're talking about the Milwaukee Bucks. I said, they're a 3 seed, and we talk about them like they're a 7 or 8 seed. I got no love for this version of the Milwaukee Bucks. They're done. It's over. So Doc is right. Winning a championship teams are fragile, and the Bucks didn't recognize that. Once you have it, you try to keep it together as much as you can. You try to figure out where some of the cracks are. You kind of, it's like grout. Okay, you got to put the grout in to keep the major pieces together. I'm talking some construction for all of y'all who know construction. All right, so you got to have that to keep it all together. But the Bucks didn't. They thought, hey, we won the championship. We got Giannis. We can just blow out the coach, and we can move Drew Holiday, and we can move Grayson Allen. We can do all this stuff, and it's the same. It's not the same. They missed their window. Their window closed. They're done.
Well, speaking of archives, I feel like I didn't think it was fair, but as we know, especially in this league, deserves got nothing to do with it. I didn't think it was fair for Budenholzer to be fired last year when Giannis was hurt in the first round last year. I didn't think it was fair for him to be fired. But without being a contortionist and bending over backwards to make excuses, I hear you. You're saying that it didn't matter whether Giannis was hurt or Dame was hurt for several games. This team was fatally flawed, and this outcome was inevitable. So you picked the Pacers. But wait, but just for clarification, Giannis was hurt before the Pacers series. So if Giannis had been healthy, you would have picked the Pacers. If the Bucks were fully healthy, you're saying you would have picked the Pacers. Okay,
Pacers,
I'll accept your representation on that.
They're better than the Bucks.
Okay.
Fully healthy.
I'm not trying to discredit.
Fully healthy, they're better.
That's fair, and I think it's a... You're in a privileged position to learn a thing or two. It's not hard to pick the Bucks or pick the Pacers. I know you think that they're better, but pick the Pacers going into a series where Giannis is hurt, and then after a series in which Giannis missed it and Damian Lillard missed several games, to be like, I told you so. It's like, all I'm saying is you can't dismiss that they were missing their two best players.
I'll give you that. Okay. I know you had your... Bear with me. You said earlier, you got a bunch of stats.
Some stats? Yeah. Okay. What you got?
I'm just going to give you this one.
All right.
Don't you think 45 games is a pretty good sample size?
That's a decent sample size.
45 games.
That's
21 and 24. The Bucks are 21-24 with Doc Rivers.
With Doc Rivers as coach?
21-24. They're not good. They're not a good team.
That's fine.
They got a great player. They got so let me just, can I just break them down? Can I break them down respectfully?
Break them down. Break them down.
Break them down respectfully.
So it could forever and consistently be broke.
All right.
Yo, go ahead.
They've got one of the greatest players in the history of the game in Giannis. That's what they have. They do. Absolutely. One of the greatest players in the history of the game. They've got one of the most brilliant scorers in basketball history in Dame Lillard, who is also one of the worst defensive players I've ever seen at any position. He's a bad defender.
He's not below average. He ain't that bad.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. He's a bad defender.
Really?
So he said, they have another
scorer. He's one of the worst you've ever seen.
Yes. I mean, yes.
That bad?
He don't play D. Dame don't play D.
Relative to offense,
D is for Dame. D is only for Dame.
Worst you've ever seen. Bro, yes, you've seen a lot of players is all I'm saying.
Yes.
Like, I mean, that's...
He's bad. He's bad. So, like, you see a theme here. And then Chris Middleton, who's also another good scorer, not athletic, and doesn't play defense. So if you take away,
Brooke
they
Lopez,
don't have, they lack.
Bobby Portis,
good player, but they don't lock anybody down. They can't defend. They're too old and too, and they lack athleticism and energy to do what Doc is asking them to do, and he knows it. And their best defensive player, Pat Beverly, is small.
Oh, that's
it's funny. Look. He keeps doing the too small thing to other people.
Look, small,
he's small.
Small in more ways than one.
Yeah, thank you.
We'll get to him in a moment. We'll get to him in a moment.
So
in other words, you reject my premise.
Yes. Like,
that it is no excuse. Like, basically, right. All this did was expedite the inevitable, that the Pacers just put them out of their misery and they spared them the indignity of underachieving more so than they already had. Is that what you're saying in more or less in summary?
They're so done. Look at these guys. Who's, you want to talk about building a team? Like the league keeps going, and this is what franchises need to understand when they have a little bit of success. Just having your great player is not going to give you a gateway to the conference finals or the NBA finals.
Look at the Milwaukee Bucks. That's the lesson.
You look at the Milwaukee Bucks now, and I know it's a different conference. I'm just saying, like, how teams have – look what's happened in the last 3 years since they won the championship. You win that championship, you try your best to improve the team or do whatever you can to keep that thing together because – we weren't talking about Oklahoma City 3 years ago. We weren't talking about Minnesota 3 years ago. Boston, even though they had Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, Boston has changed in the last 3 years with their personnel. You gotta keep improving. You gotta just keep thinking ahead of the crowd,
or
you wind up like the Milwaukee Bucks.
Well, Wait a minute. That's exactly what they've done. They wouldn't. It ain't been anything but complacent. Maybe I'm just not hearing you right. Maybe this is me.
No, you're hearing me right.
Maybe I'm the problem.
You're not the problem. They've made bad decisions. They haven't been complacent.
But they made bad decisions.
Okay.
Gotcha. All right. Thank you for clarifying that. Right. What was I going to say? Yeah, I just think that at least beat one in the first round. Oh, blind spots. I was going to say one thing about blind spots. You said they have some blind spots. I think I have a blind spot for Damian Lillard, if I'm being honest. I have a blind spot for Damian Lillard. And is it that obvious? I'm not telling you anything you don't already know?
No, you love him. You love him. You give him the benefit of the doubt every opportunity. You always give Dame the benefit of the doubt.
I can be fair and balanced. Well, so I guess what I'm saying is, maybe it's wishful thinking. When I say I feel like they could have beaten the Pacers if they were whole, maybe that's more wishful thinking on my part, not wanting Dame to go out in the first round and to lose this, what do you call it, this imaginary equity that I guess is in my head that he had built up. The lesson for me, though, is just there's no guarantees. You know, it's like we get so excited. And this is why I said what I said about the NFL offseason. We get so excited about the moves these teams make in the offseason and, you know, the formation of a dynamic duo or a big three or a fantastic four or a super team.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it's like all it does is just like it just raises the level of expectation to make the disappointment that more devastating, because it's like arguably the two biggest trades of the offseason, certainly the most expensive, were Damian Lillard and Bradley Beal, and they all gone.
Okay,
fishing.
Right. And I kind of think, you know what? The way the league is now, I think that's kind of, okay, I don't want to go so far and say it's dead. I think it's fading. I think it's fading fast. It's part of a bygone era, this duo, what, you know, Anthony Davis and LeBron had and got a championship out of in 2020. The duo or the big three, whether it was, you know, KG and Paul and Ray Allen or LeBron and Bosh and Wade, that whole big three, just like trying to put all your chips in for that. And we know, and I don't want to spend any time no more. I got all my Brooklyn jokes are gone, but we know how that happened with Harden and Kyrie and KD. But look what happened, as you just referenced, look what happened in Phoenix. Like, usually in those big three situations, you wind up, or those duo situations, you wind up giving up way more capital than you should, because you think this player, you're overestimating the power of a great player or how a great player will transform your franchise, and you say it's worth it. The Clippers, another good example.
Yeah.
They gave up so much. They gave up so much to OKC. But what's going to happen? Like, who? And I asked this when it first happened. Who's going to win a championship first? I think we know. If anybody wins, because it's hard. But if anybody wins a championship,
it is hard. Doc's right.
It's going to be OKC before the Clippers, because the Clippers gave up so much, because they just the gratification of right now of having pairing Kawhi and Paul George was worth it to them, giving up a ton of draft picks and a player who's in an MVP conversation right now. So I think that's not a way to build a team. Just
ain't
like,
no, ain't
let's
no quick
get a big
fixes.
Three. We'll be all set. Nope, it's not enough.
Yeah. Will Joel Embiid ever win a championship?
I wish I had more hands.
Doc's right. Doc's right. It's hard. And I realize Embiid was compromised all season, really. But he gutted it out. He gave it all he could. But two things. One, even though, you know, he played through pain, he still did what Embiid has always done, which is be one of the best big men in the league but come up small in the biggest moments.
Yeah.
And the more things change in Philly, the more they stay the same, and he's the constant. How many people have been thrown under the Southeastern Pennsylvania Transportation Authority bus?
Go ahead, flow with it.
Southeastern Pennsylvania Transportation Authority is what I'm probably on when I ain't flipping the land throughout your section.
There it
How
is.
Many people
there it is.
Have been thrown under
Philadelphia,
the bus? Delphi
Pensy, that's my residency.
How many people have been thrown under the bus over the years? Justifiably so in most cases, but it's like, dude just may not have it, man. And I'm fond of saying, just because somebody hasn't done something doesn't mean they can't or won't. Once upon a time, it was Giannis's don't have what it takes to do it in the playoffs and win a championship. I mean,
what's the count, though? What is the count?
I want
you to count, because it's amazing.
The body count?
You said how many people have been thrown under the bus? Let's try to count that. Is it 10? Is it 10
Doc,
people?
All right, Doc.
Name all the coaches.
Doc, Brett Brown.
Yep.
Ben Simmons.
Yep. Harden.
James Harden. Now, okay, but in fairness, now wait a minute. Okay, but in fairness, all right. I'm not gonna count Brett Brown, but Doc Rivers, James Harden, and Ben Simmons. They don't exactly have sterling reputations themselves.
Well, wait.
Okay,
a minute.
So, but just, I'm just saying though, like.
But how'd they make the situation worse?
Okay.
So you're coming in.
I'm
you're,
just saying two things can be true.
Situation. Y'all was jacked up before I got here. Oh, so it's my
for
fault?
Sure, for sure. They didn't make it better, but okay. It was, yeah, for sure.
Because Nick Nurse Tobias is coming Harris. Too. He'll be thrown under the bus too. Nick
Tobias
Nurse.
Harris.
He'll be thrown under the bus.
Nick Nurse. Well.
He will be.
He should. Well, you know, he should not, be.
I didn't say he should be. I said he will be.
Well, no, I mean
that's
I,
what they do.
But I'm just trying to figure out, like, is Buddy Hield? Did Buddy Hield get in the game in the third quarter or not? Like, Buddy, well, I don't know what his rotation. I'm not quite sure what the doctor ordered for Nick Nurse, but like that was not, that didn't make a whole lot of sense for that guy to not still be in the game. Anyway, let's see, who else? Losing Jimmy Butler. Losing Jimmy Butler was an excuse. That was an excuse.
So,
point is, it's like
Daryl Morey. Well, Daryl Morey has been a guy there that has been a problem, right? Or has perceived as a problem.
So here's the stat.
Back in the day, you don't remember this. Al Horford was thrown under the bus too because they signed
crowded,
Al Horford.
Yeah. Not enough spacing.
Play with,
yeah.
So
yeah.
Come on, man. After a while,
and granted, his physical conditioning may not. Here's another one. His physical conditioning may not have been top shelf. He was hurt, missed a lot of time. You know, some said he shouldn't even be playing when the playoffs start. I feel like there were some people like, oh, he shouldn't even be playing. You know, so I do give him credit for gutting it out. But in the final analysis, in 6 fourth quarters, 5.8 points, 23.1% from the field, 11.1% from three. I don't know, man. Like, process might be complete.
Say it. There you go. Say it.
I mean, it's just, I hate proclaiming what somebody is never going to do. And maybe he does it somewhere else. Maybe
no,
he doesn't
say
the second
here.
Best player. Oh, in Philly?
Yeah, he won't do it in Philly. I can't say he'll never win a championship because if he goes to a good situation, which he's not in, if he goes to a good situation, he may win a championship. But Philadelphia, they can never. I can't
never
even come
really,
up with a good.
Can never
yeah, right.
curl, never quite. Yeah, you know.
I can't. There's not even an analogy of a team that I can really compare them to. I don't know, man. I haven't won a championship since, you know, the 80s, the early 80s with Doc and Moses, the other Doc. The Doc who's not thrown under the bus. Doc Irving.
No, forget a championship. They ain't been to the conference finals in 23 years.
Yeah.
Get a championship. They ain't even sniffed the conference finals.
Yeah, it's just, is it the composition of the team? Is it the need for either Embiid saying this or a general manager, coach tandem saying about Embiid, he's the MVP, he's our guy, he can do all this. Our team must start with him. He's got to be the first option. We got to cater. We got to build our team around him. Is that the problem? Should they just go out and, hey, maybe there's a, I guess Jimmy Butler years ago was that guy, where maybe that guy should be the so-called leader of the team. And Embiid is still dynamic. He still has size and can score and all that. But it's not. Everything goes through Joel. And maybe Ben Simmons, like we talked earlier, like Doc Rivers is not the right person to say winning is hard because there are always these punchlines that come after that. Yeah, winning is really hard, especially when you're up 3-1 in a series, Doc. You know what I mean? Like there's so many things you can say. But Ben Simmons, we didn't hear it from him, but sources said that Ben Simmons was frustrated that everything went through Embiid.
Sure.
So maybe he's not the right person to say it, but he was saying the right thing. That there are times, maybe there are times in the last 10 years that it should have been more equitable, but it became so Embiid dominant that it made everybody else small. Underneath it,
see,
made
okay.
everybody else come up
but all right.
underneath their greatness.
So maybe like the Bucks, maybe they were never going to win it this year. I mean, they're never going to win it just because topsy-turvy the regular season was with Embiid missing all the time he did. But you started off the conversation when I was waxing poetic about the six-game series that had seven games worth of drama, that, hey, they cost us the seventh game. The officials cost us the seventh game. And what would the dynamic of the series, how would the complexion of the series have shifted if it were 1-1? So it's just interesting how we choose to write history, what kind of narrative we choose to construct, because this is why Doc is right. This shit, at the end of the day, this shit's just hard. Because on the Philly side of things, Embiid was hurt. Are we tired of giving him excuses? Are we tired of, you know, blaming everybody else? Yes, but he was hurt. And the officiating was questionable, even though I, for the record, think it all evened out. I think it went both ways. On the other side, and this is why it's like the blame game has always been a challenge for me. Because the implicit in the blame game is that a team is entitled to a title. That a team is supposed to do something else. As if the other team is just supposed to say, yep, you know, it's your turn, Joel Embiid. You've been struggling long enough. Go right ahead, my man. Jalen Brunson and the Knicks are just going to, like, give you a free pass to the semifinals. Like, we just talked about how good the Knicks are, how good Jalen Brunson is. Maybe the Knicks just weren't going to be denied. Like, maybe the problem for the Sixers was just that they went up against a better team. Sometimes it's just that simple. Sometimes it ain't about how much Karl Malone and John Stockton or Charles Barkley just aren't good enough. No, this year, right. But all it takes is that one. No, you're right. And year after year, it's always something. That's what we agree on. It's always something. But a lot of times, the other team has a lot to do with it. You know, and that's not sexy. That's not salacious. That's not controversial. That's not a hot take. It's just the thing that I think we conveniently overlook. Because I don't think you can yes, two things can be true. But I don't know that you can sing the praises of the Knicks and talk about how good and how dangerous they are. And then talk about how it's a failure on the part of the 76ers.
Well,
somebody got to win.
That's true. Yeah, one team you're talking about. Well, for me, one team I'm talking about 2024, and the other team, yes, I am going back
the last 10 years,
right? The 10 years of the process and all that stuff.
Sure.
And then just like, okay.
No, Sixers fans ain't trying to hear this shit.
Oh yeah, another person.
They ain't trying to hear this shit.
Sam
Hinkie. We forgot somebody under the bus.
Sam Hinkie.
Yeah.
And then Colangelo and Colangelo's wife. Remember that the whole thing?
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying, deservedly so. Like, I mean, some of these people we talk about under the bus, like, yeah, you know what? Go ahead. You know, roll over.
Hey, you know what? Listen, come on. We both know. Our wives would do it for us. Like, you know, you did what? You had a burner account? To stand up for me? I appreciate it. That's, you know what? That's a ride or die, man. That's good stuff right there.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
It's hard not to add a side of hot, crispy hash browns to your favorite McDonald's breakfast. It's even harder not to eat said hash browns before you get home. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Okay, speaking of standing up for folks. The assembled media, if I could call it that, the group of people that was surrounding Patrick Beverly last night, count me in that number that would have loved to have seen all of them leave Patrick Beverly to talk to his damn self after he pulled this shit. Here's Patrick Beverly post-game last night.
Here.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Before I finish.
Yeah. You subscribe to my pod?
Do I subscribe to you? I do not.
So you can't interview me then? Okay. No disrespect.
Well, Jamal is here.
You subscribe? Okay, cool. Yeah. That's cool.
Again, there were a couple times within a bucket or two. In previous games, y'all have been able to kind of get over that hump or maybe. Was it anything they did in particular, or was it just one of those where the bucket didn't go down, there wasn't the stop, they made one? What kind of prevented that you all from being able to get over, kind of like you have in the past?
You move that mic, please, or just get out the circle, please, for me, please, ma'am. If you're not subscribed to my pod, I appreciate that. Thank you.
And this is after throwing the basketball at the fans. This is after throwing the basketball at the fans, which I don't care what the fans said, man. And we've talked a long time for the entitlement that fans feel in terms of what they can say to players because they bought a ticket. You can't do that. You cannot throw a bat not once but twice at fans. So connecting that with this interaction,
yeah, go ahead.
With the reporter, like, just because you lost don't mean you got to act like a loser. And Patrick Beverly, he's shown us who he is time and time again. It's long past time for us to believe him. Look, he's got subscribed to the pod on his hat. I don't cover the Bucks. I'm not there every day at every game. Apparently. Or even possibly, this is his policy, where you got to subscribe to the pod to interview him, whoever you are. To which I say, who do you think you are? It's like this, bro, you Patrick Beverly, man. Right. And some might say, well, that's how we got here, believing that he's somebody that he's not. Because I always say, and I've said this in several contexts, Michael, the way I've conducted myself in my career is I've never believed myself to be entitled to anybody's time. Entitled to anybody's time. Nobody has to talk to me. I appreciate when they do. Thank you for the time. Without fail, I'm going to say that. On the flip side, why we got to talk to Patrick Beverly?
Okay, there we go.
Why do you think it's such a privilege for us, whoever we are, to talk to you? I'm at this place in my life, man, where it's like, I can't stand entitled people in general. We used the word hubris earlier. Like, yo, man, I'm here to tell you, your 15 minutes is going to be up like everybody else's. Sooner or later. Probably sooner than later. Your 15 minutes is going to be up like everybody else's. So to act as though, like, it was just unprofessional. It was a turnoff. Like, again, apparently this has been his universal policy. Have you subscribed to my pod? Man.
Oh, it's pathetic.
I hope you lost half of them. I hope he lost half of them after last night. Like, uncalled for.
Good luck with
that. And if he's been doing that, everybody should have already, like, left him alone in his locker. Because, like, we've given him this microphone and given him this platform and put him on all these shows and fed this troll. Stop feeding the trolls. Stop feeding him. Stop.
And
honestly, we're guilty of it right now. Michael, I promise you, there's been a million times on this show where I've said, hey, Mike, you get the last word. And then I said some shit on the back end. So I will not do it this time. And the reason I'm not going to do it this time is because we've already given enough time. We're giving him the attention that he wants by conversing about him right now. So whatever you got to say is going to be the last word on this.
I will say this. As members of the media, a lot of times, many of us have been trained with this idea of objectivity and not putting ourselves in the story.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.
Right. Yeah. Like we've been told that, hey, putting ourselves in the story or being part of the story is not the way to go. I think that's false. I think that is a dated way of looking at things. In certain situations, your humanity, your principles rise above your training as a journalist or a broadcaster or a podcaster, whatever it is. Why am I saying that? Because if you're around, if you're a member of the media, and you're around Patrick Beverley and he pulls that crap, walk away, call him out and walk away. Do not let another member of the media just sitting there like, what the hell is going on? She's trying to do her job and Patrick Beverley is tripping because, oh, he sees somebody who didn't subscribe to the podcast. But even worse, journalistically, if you don't want to walk away, if you don't want to call him on his BS, think about this. Let's just go to 30,000 feet for a second. He wanted to talk about his podcast. He wants subscribers. That's what he wants to talk about. But the story that we all wanted was, hey, what the hell happened with the fan? He didn't want to talk about that. So journalistically, you ain't in the right place. One, because the dude's got a jacked up perspective. And two, he didn't want to talk about the news of the night. They lost. Mm-hmm. He had an interaction with the fan and he didn't want to talk about it. And I'll just, let me just add this. There, you saw the network that the reporter, you saw the on the mic, what's it called? Mike Stan? Mike, what is it called?
The flag.
Mike Flag. Thank you.
The flag, yeah.
You saw the network that was there.
Yeah.
Hey, get what you pay for. That same network had him on multiple platforms spewing his nonsense. Spewing nonsense on there. And they loved it. Ooh, can you believe what he said? Can you believe what he said? He was foolish then. And you had him on the air. And now, are you surprised? You get what you pay for sometimes. You get what you pay for.
Chickens come home to roost. All right, let's take a break and talk some football. He got more time than he deserves, but goodness gracious.
No, I'm not subscribing.
No. I wish I had more.
Hell no. Hell no, I'm not subscribing to that podcast.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Okay. What do you do outside of football?
Chill at the house, golf, bowl a little bit.
You golf?
I ain't no golf. I'm Tiger Wish he could. I'm not Tiger Woods. No. I wish I could put it and do all that. Them boys out there shooting 5 under. I ain't doing all that. I'm like, TV 5 to hit just to put it in. But I'm going to go have fun. Like, you know, it's controlled chaos. You know, you frustrated, but you can't get mad. Pull a muscle in your back trying to hit the ball. So it forces me to stay calm and just swing. Just have some fun.
Man, you down with the school in Michigan for 2 years? Guess where I got this from, though? I'm saying you gotta guess. You're gonna be wrong though, but guess.
Tom Izzo.
Nah. Macy's. What you mean? they be on sale on the rack, all the colors.
Right.
Look, $79.89. Nice little deal. You can get the trench coat for like $100. Nice little. I'll take you there personally. I might go get some more colors. I need a blue one and another red one. See, I ain't know nothing about Thanksgiving. I get, you see, I shop like my mama. I get my coats in the summertime. You gotta shop a season or two before, just in case, you know, and it be cheaper. Cause you going Thanksgiving, everybody in Thanksgiving, you know what I'm saying? Who we starting with? Oh, we could go. Oh, my bad. Hold up, y'all can hear me? This on or this off? All right, bro. I'm just making sure I'm who we ain't trying to set me up. Who we got going first?
Does Keon Coleman have a show yet? Like, who's supposed to be on Hard Knocks this year? Because, like, just give it to Keon Coleman by himself. Like, bruh, I was already going to draft him.
Yes, you could be wrong.
I was already going to draft him in Dynasty just because of the landing spot and the draft capital, but he's definitely coming with me. We'll see. We started that side. That's right, you got 12. We started that side.
I got 10. I got 10.
Oh. I beg your pardon. Excuse me. We started that side with his combine interview. What percentage of the Bills' decision to draft Keon Coleman do you think boiled down to that combine interview? Talented player. But, like, I don't know how you don't 30%. Hire that person. How much?
30.
That's it? Man, I'm about to go on 50. Ooh. I'm about to go on 50. And I'm not even saying that jokingly. It's like, listen, after the Stephon Diggs experience.
He's our kind of guy.
How do you not walk out like, oh, that's so refreshing. Like, oh, this is a guy that if nothing else, he'll lighten the mood. Like, it's just that of course, it's not the reason you draft the player. You draft him because of what you see on film and how you project him in your offense. But still, that interview had to, like, it had to be a, I would pound the table or stand on the table or whichever you prefer in a draft room and be like, yo, I need Keon Coleman in this building. We need that kind of life. The energy has been funky around here. We absolutely need him in Buffalo. Good for the Bills. You know how I feel about draft grades. They get an A. Even though I was just killing them the other day for trading with the Chiefs, which I know you can't worry about what the other team's going to do. When we talk about this, letting the Chiefs get Xavier Worthy, I didn't realize what a comedian they were getting in Coleman. Bang-up job for the Buffalo Bills.
And did you hear, what percentage factored into this conversation, this phone call between Josh Allen and Keon Coleman, where Josh Allen reportedly said to him, hey, you're the guy I wanted.
You're the guy I want.
Maybe they allowed Josh to see that interview. He said, I'm entertained. I'm thoroughly entertained by Keon Coleman. Good player, by the way. Yeah. I think really a good fit for their offense.
I like him a lot.
You know, along with Khalil Shakir and not necessarily Chase Claypool, who they picked up today, but.
I think they're good room in
Buffalo.
I think they're going to be a lot like the Chiefs have been, where it's going to be a lot more egalitarian. Like, I don't think they're going to funnel everything through one guy. I think they'll all have roles and, you know, none of them will chirp in Josh's ear along with Dalton Kincaid. Like, none of them will chirp in Josh Allen's ear, and he'll just be able to hit the open guy or, you know, exploit whatever matchup they see fit and run around and make plays the way only he can. All right. Another interesting soundbite came from Jaylen Warren of the Pittsburgh Steelers, who told Cam Hayward on, I think it was his podcast, a live podcast, that within the Steelers, they have discussed using Justin Fields as a kick returner, which doesn't bode well for his chances of competing for the quarterback spot, because typically if you got designs on somebody being a starting quarterback, you're not, you know, thinking about using them on kick returns. New rules, which I told you, that's what was so fascinating about these new kickoff return rules, was going to be the strategy involved. Like, what do the returners look like now? Is it a different type of person you want as a returner than what we've seen historically? What about the people blocking? What kind of athletes are going to be best suited for this format, if you will? So I thought it was fascinating that Jaylen Warren revealed this potential strategy on the part of the Steelers to have Justin Fields as a possible kick returner. If I'm Justin Fields, though, I don't know if that's insulting or ingenious, because I'm a quarterback, dude. Like, I ain't trying to switch positions and return kicks. That's what you got Cordarrelle Patterson for. My other takeaway from it, before I pass it to you, my other takeaway from it was, I told you. Remember, like, y'all all looked at me like I was crazy when I talked about Justin Fields being the best in terms of the package. Size, speed, elusiveness, strength, running quarterback that I've seen when you put all of that together. Somebody in the Pittsburgh Steelers organization, they're smarter than me. It's the Steelers. Thinking like, oh, this dude might be able to return kicks. How many quarterbacks can return kicks? A dude built like that can run like that. So, told you. But yeah, those are my takeaways. I'm fascinated by it and told you so. What else you got?
What was that thing a while ago? What was it? What was the experiment? Was it Coke or Pepsi that had the experiment? Was it New Coke or?
I think it was Coke.
Like, yeah. How long that thing was? How long that thing
not
was?
Not very.
Like, how long we got to put up with this? This is just, it's a national football. It's a national organization. It's the National Football League. And we just playing around, like, did they get some kids? They get some kids, some local kids. Hey, what would you do? Like, what kind of games do you play? Hey, you know, this is what we do. We don't really, our parents don't let us play football, really. But what we do sometimes is like, you know, nobody can move until somebody else moves. And then that's how, like, it's just so stupid.
Pitch up, tackle. Remember pitch up, tackle?
Yeah, right. I mean, this is not even about Justin Fields. It's just right. The whole thing. It's that, I guarantee you, we're one and done. This is an experiment. We're one and done. This is comical. I can't believe that this is what we have in a real season.
Okay. I just
in a real football season with real football players.
You don't get to like it. All right. Just remember you said this. You don't get to like it. And you don't get to be like, you know what?
I want to point out.
Just give it a chance. Just give it a chance.
I want to point out that, and I'm sorry, Devin Hester. I'm sorry that you're going to the Hall of Fame, and in August you're going to talk to people in Canton, Ohio, who have totally replaced why you're there. That game has changed. That no longer exists. So many great players who were great kickoff returners and just great in the return game. Not even necessarily kickoff returners. There were some great gunners out there too. Yeah, your business is. You've been replaced. You've been replaced by a gimmick. So anyway.
So hey, we're just about out of time. I want to connect this to the last football story I want
to
touch.
To what? The circus?
Is that what you're calling it? The circus? Well, because a week ago today, we were trying to, you know where I'm going? A week ago today, we were trying to figure out what the fuck the Falcons were doing. Okay? Like taking Michael Penix, 8th overall, after they paid Kirk Cousins $100 million in the offseason. I know. I'm still, a week later, I'm still processing it. But in the meantime, I saw this article from Mike Sando in The Athletic where he had, like, NFL personnel people unfiltered. Anonymous off-the-record quotes. You know they're going to let loose, right? One of them said about the Falcons, because going back to Justin Fields, like, I said this last week. And many have said it as well. It's like, if you were going to take Michael Penix at 8, you could have taken a stopgap or a bridge starter. And at one point, Justin Fields, we thought he was earmarked for Atlanta. We thought he was going to Atlanta.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Going home. This is what an anonymous former GM said to The Athletic. I'd love to know what the conversations were in Atlanta leading up to that and why there was no adult supervision. That adult supervision, Elijah, that stung. Truth be told, they could be good next year with Kirk Cousins, come away with the 25th or 26th pick, and then you take a quarterback in that range. That is what Green Bay did with Jordan Love, and is fundamentally different from what Atlanta just did, which is why so many of us had an issue with the pick. But the adult supervision part, and you had the same reaction. Yeah, it feels loaded.
And, you know, it's loaded. It's loaded, and this is what happens. Now, I got to be consistent in this regard. When Chris Ballard went off about all the people ripping on A.D. Mitchell and was like, hey, this is, I hate when we do this. We tear kids down and all this stuff. Anonymous, put your name to it.
Yeah.
Now, as a journalist, I don't always need you to put your name to it. I need it to be true. I need it to be something that I can confirm and verify. Yeah. But there are some famous situations in journalism history where people have not put their names to it, but it's been very valuable anyway. But I'm just saying, like, the anonymous part, if scouts talking about players are nasty, former GMs and league executives talking about other teams, oh, that's next level. That is next level nasty. Adult supervision, so that's somebody with an issue with. Now, who they got an issue with? Is it Fontenot? Is it Arthur? Yeah. Who they got an issue with?
Right.
That is really, that's
Raheem Morris, adult supervision. Oh, like,
of course.
Look, again, I didn't agree with it. I can't find many people who do agree with it. Although I have, with the benefit of the last week and kind of I could calm down, I do have some thoughts. At the end of the day, I still come back to it wasn't the right move, or they didn't do it the right way. But I also said, even as I recall going off last Friday, I still said that these people have put way more thought and research and time into this decision than we have. This is our knee-jerk reaction. So the adult supervision line just bothered me. It also just bothered me. And I hope this isn't a stretch, but as a black man, it just hit differently as a black man. Because we're talking about a black GM and a black head coach.
Right.
You know, and I'm not saying this anonymous GM was calling them boy. Like, I'm not trying to go that deep down the rabbit hole. But I think when I the adult supervision line, just like, I'm like, oh, wait, what do you mean? Like, hold on. These are grown-ass men that have worked to get where they are. And we can question their decision and disagree with their decision. But adult supervision connotes children, connotes underqualified or in over their head. And who are the adults that you think should have been in the room?
And here's the other thing.
You know, wrong way.
Good observation, Mike. But I think also, this is why I said former GM. So what are we bringing into it? How are you a former GM by choice? Many of them are not.
Yeah.
Are you a former GM that, you know, feels like you could do the job better than Fontenot, than other GMs in the league? So, like, what kind of baggage are you bringing to this conversation with Mike Sando? And because it is dangerous, even though we've done it. I know you've quoted people off the record or anonymously. Yeah. I've quoted people anonymously. Try not to make a habit out of it. I got to tell you, you know, pat myself on the back. I've never done it in a book, though. I've never done it in book form because I just feel like, yeah, that is this. If I'm really convinced about something, if it's that important, either I'm just not going to use it, if it's that important, if I need to use it, I need somebody to. I need a quote around it. If it's not going to be a quote around it, I can't use it. And so we're just so used to it. We're so used to it. I think we just kind of, we don't flinch enough at anonymous sources that are not as accusatory and as inflammatory as this one is. But a lot of them are. That's why I like Chris Ballard's comment. Like, most of his comment was, we're tearing people down and you can just sit there and just throw your rocks and throw your shots. And you have no accountability for it. And so sometimes you have these comments come up and we just keep on going. And I think sometimes we should pause and say, wait a minute. I think that's a little bit too much.
But the criticism, look, like I said, but I think I led with what the F are the Falcons doing. And so there are plenty
you
of
You led
us,
with it. Michael
did.
Smith.
Yeah. Well, that's true. Oh, yeah. Yes. But I mean, so I'm saying it's fine to wonder, why would you do this? So. Couple of thoughts occurred to me after Friday, because we talked about it for a while, and most of it was just the shock.
Yeah.
So, still surprised, still wouldn't have done it that way. The first thing that I would say is I feel for Michael Penix, because that's just not the way somebody's, you know, dream of being a first-round pick, everything he's worked for and been through to get to this point. You don't want to be a footnote. Nobody dreams of being a first-round footnote. And the player, the human being, is unfortunately a footnote to the football decision-maker's questionable choice of drafting him. He can't control who drafts him. Drafting him after they gave all this money to Kirk Cousins. Like, he's walking into controversy that he did not create. Which leads me to the second point, which is, as much as I love the draft, and a lot of times we talk about the draft and whether or not it's fair or it's un-American to the employees, it's fair to the employees or unfair to the employees,
yeah,
as in the players. It's through the prism of, you know, John Elway or Eli Manning. It's like, okay, I don't want to play for this dysfunctional team. But like in the case of Michael Penix, and there was a lot of that smoke or a lot of that noise, I should say, around Caleb Williams, you know. Ironically, the Bears put him in a better position on paper, at least, than any number one pick has ever been in coming into the league as a quarterback. But it was a lot of like, oh, the Bears, historically, they ruined quarterbacks. Look what they just did to Justin Fields. He should have a power play. Caleb Williams should pull a power play and say he doesn't want to play for the Bears. If anybody was in position and was justified in pulling a power play and saying, I don't want to play for this team, it would be Michael Penix.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
To get drafted into a situation that you didn't create and drafted into a circus or chaos, and your GM is saying if he sits for 4 or 5 years, that's a good thing. For who? Not for him. It's like, who says, you know what, I can't wait to sit for 4 or 5 years? And look,
can you imagine
much like
that?
Much like Jordan Love, no, I can't. Much like Jordan Love, much like Aaron Rodgers, like he might benefit from sitting for a year or even two. The list is long of quarterbacks who it was nice to come into the league and just be able to watch and learn from a veteran. But not it's different to watch versus waste away. He's as pro-ready as they come from a maturity standpoint, a mental standpoint, a physical standpoint. He's ready to play now. Now you got to wait because somebody else decided that it was in their best interest to get him to wait. Last thing, and I'll give it to you on this point. From the Falcons' yeah. perspective, I do think there is something to be said for not drafting for need in the top 10. Because don't they say that they get you in trouble? So if Penix was the best player on their board, who's the best player on their board? No, I still don't agree with it.
I know.
I'd
could be just, shocked if he was the best player on their board at 8.
Okay.
If Michael Penix is your best player on your, well, you got to question
Your board. Reevaluate your board.
Your board's
you
wrong.
Reevaluate.
That's right. Your board's okay. wrong.
That's fair. So that would make it even worse if it was a quarterback that they didn't need and they reached. That'd be a double whammy. But I'm saying, like, if he were the best player on their board, I could see why they would say we have an opportunity to get a guy for beyond life after Kirk Cousins that was special. This is a unique set of circumstances. Having said all that, I don't think they should have done it. It should have been one or the other. Either don't pay Kirk Cousins or go another direction at quarterback or try to trade back. Easier said than done. Takes two, whatever. But just some thoughts.
This is the last thing
I'll
say.
Follow-up thoughts I had on it. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, and I'm glad you did. This is the last thing I'll say on it. This is it. This is all I got to say on it. The day it happened, I went back and I said, okay, did I overstate that? This is one of the 5 worst decisions in Falcons history. And I thought about it. No, it's not. I didn't overstate it. It is one of the 5 worst decisions in Falcons history because, like many bad decisions, it's not just the decision, it's the ripples mm-hmm. that come from it. So this yeah. bad decision to take yeah. Michael Penix at number 8, not to draft Michael Penix, but to draft him at number 8 when you were in the bottom 5 in all defensive categories in the NFL last year, and you've got a defensive-minded head coach, and you've got the opportunity to really compete in the NFC South, you take a quarterback at number 8. It's not only bad there, it's bad because now you've affected, as you pointed out, the outlook of that young quarterback, Michael Penix. You've affected your relationship that you're still building with Kirk Cousins. You didn't help your team immediately at a great position in a draft where you had your pick of the best. I don't know. Okay, so whoever the best defensive player was on their board versus Michael Penix, yeah. I'm guessing the defensive player was here. And Penix was there. The best of it, you had your pick. You could have taken anybody. Hell, you could have taken Roma Dunze if you wanted to. You could have taken an offensive player.
I don't think anybody probably, would have minded if they took Rome. I think people thought they would take Rome. Yeah.
Who was probably rated higher than his college quarterback, Michael Penix. Mm-hmm. So you didn't help the team. But more than that, everybody's watching. And the guys
in that building say, you know what, these guys, they say a lot, I don't trust them. You've already eroded the trust in your building before you started training camp. Really, really bad decision that I think they will be paying for multiple years.
That was just giving me Calvin Candy vibes. From time to time, adult supervision is required. I'm like, damn, like adult adult supervision. Yeah, like, man.
Don't start doing that.
We don't agree with the decision, but like, I'm not about to like sit up here and disrespect these dudes and be like,
yeah, exactly. Don't question if y'all don't belong, if I have the ability to, you know, if I'm authorized to make, you know, major decisions. Now you are being disrespectful.
I also don't think it's not in a vacuum. You talk about decisions that have ripple effects. It's also not in a vacuum. I think Atlanta, more than anybody else who hired a coach, probably because of the article that came out about, you know, Robert Kraft and what he may or may not have told Arthur Blank about trusting Bill Belichick, and, you know, the fact that the Falcons seem to be the closest to hiring Belichick. It's like that pick happening after them deciding not to hire the greatest coach of all time. You can't disassociate those two decisions.
That's true.
From each other. You know, that didn't help matters either. All right, big dog. Have a good week next week. I'll see you on the other side.
Yes, indeed. You have a good week as well. And we'll talk when we get back. We'll have some more good stuff to talk about. You know, like some draft stuff, our own draft stuff. I'm excited about this.
I don't think anybody cares about our dynasty team. I'm going to go on a little
bit. I think they do.
You think they care about our dynasty teams?
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Especially after some of the great moves I've made lately. So.
I'm glad you care. You went from giving me shit for doing it all the time. Like, bro, you way more active than me now. You making up for lost time. Like, every time you look, you're making a trade.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.